We're going to share some things with you in a minute about the message, but before I do, several of you have asked about the trip to Costa Rica, and I just want to take a couple of minutes and share, and I'm going to give Lori the chance to share also if she'd like to give some thoughts. We left last Tuesday around midday to go down to a conference that is held for the last 6 years. It's been held every 2 years. And that what they do, what Patrick Calhoun and the Christian Sharing Christ does, is he brings in the national directors from as many of the countries as possible to a central location in order to share encouragement to them, kind of like a, not motivation, but a refreshing and blessing to them. And then also to have the opportunity for them to share back to us, both in way of testimony of things that are happening in the last, since they've last time had a conference, and also to more specifically share needs and concerns about things, because they're on the front lines of the missions of Christian Sharing Christ. And so it was a wonderful, wonderful time. We had the conference started on Wednesday, and it started out, Brother Buddy would have just jumped out of his skin just about, because about 15 young people came out with these beautiful, the girls were in white dresses and the boys were in white tops and pants. And then they all had these chest, like not vests because they didn't button in the front, but they're like sweater vest type things, you know, that out of shiny material. And they had Stars of David and crowns on them. I'm not saying what they were, well, like breastplates, I guess, but they're made out of material instead of, you know, like armor. And then they had these beautiful streamers off them, and they were doing all this Hebrew dancing and just, you know, a bunch of them all together in synchronized motion, and then they get into a file and they swing all over the place. And it was a neat way to crank out the conference, to start the conference up. You know, everybody's on their feet and enjoying the Lord, and great worship, wonderful times of worship. And then we had a lot of different folks that shared. Brother Patrick, unfortunately, so those of you on the email conference heard that I wrote back that his grandfather passed away. He got the phone call just as we were about to get on the plane. He got the phone call. And so he had to make hurried arrangements to be able to come back the next day. So we got there on Tuesday. The conference started on Wednesday. He returned on Thursday. The funeral was on Friday, and he was back in Costa Rica on Saturday. So he kind of had a hecticness. But it was really a good testimony, though, because his grandfather was 82, I think, something like that. And Patrick had led his grandfather to the Lord personally 8 years prior. And so he was able to go back and stand before the family and bear witness to that fact and to give testimony to that. And although the folks really missed him being at the conference continued. And we had brought down, had several different people who spoke. And Brother Paul Landry, who's the International Director of Topic, which is a pastor's training ministry, was there. He spoke a couple of times. Had a lady from Guatemala that came and spoke just to the ladies, and that was a neat thing. This is a ministry to them. I was able to speak in one of the sessions, but what I was mainly there for, besides the one session that I spoke on, was to translate. And the way they did it was kind of neat, because we had quite a few Americans there, but one of the brothers from Philadelphia Baptist Church brought down a small FM transmitter and a bunch of little FM radios, and so all of them would wear the little radios, and they could sit anywhere they wanted in the place, and I would be in the back of the room speaking into a microphone, translating it while it's going on. So they were actually, instead of having to sit off in a room by themselves or just sit in a little group and everybody straining to hear the translator, they had these little earpieces, and they're able to participate. And so that went very well, and the reports and the testimonies that were coming in were just phenomenal, as we heard. Let me see if I can remember all the countries that were there. You had Belize is the only country that didn't show up. So you had Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama, Bolivia, Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru. So there were 10 countries represented, plus the United States, and a couple from Belize. Something had happened, and they weren't able to make it in. And while they were there, Brother Patrick announced to the crowd, to the workers, that just this past month, he's gone to India and introduced Christian Sharing Christ and set up 3 film teams in India. And also at the conference, they announced that we have a new film team beginning in the next couple of months in Bolivia. So we're branching out into that country as well. And again, to hear the testimonies of the brothers and sisters, and to hear their victories and some of their pains. And one of the brothers that's on the Amazon, where I went a couple of years ago, Brother Jovino, was there, and he shared about a tour he made up to the cannibals. And there's still 2 cannibal tribes left in that area. And with much fear and trepidation, he went. But the Lord allowed him to show films and to see some people get saved. And he's got an invitation to go back. And it's an area that's very closely protected by the government. They don't want outsiders going in there at all. It's one of the last, I guess, truly ethnic or truly native peoples left in that region of the world. And so they're trying to keep them as undisturbed as possible. So you have to get special permissions and all that. And Brother Jovino was able to acquire those permissions and go in. And so that was exciting. And we heard some really great testimonies. And I think all the brothers and sisters that were there left so refreshed and encouraged. The last night of the conference was just to be something to be remembered for a long time. And I don't have any pictures of this. I'm sorry. I was so busy translating, I didn't take any pictures. And I'm going to get some of Patrick's copies when he gets back. But the last night of the conference, one of the things they did, we started out the closing service with a native parade. And all these 10 countries that were there, they dressed up in the clothes of their native country. And then they had this parade. And they came marching in with whatever music was from their country. You know, so the little guy from Peru comes in with this all white get up with a little, like a pack, like he's carrying. He's hunched over and he's got a special Peruvian hat on. And he's kind of hopping around to the Peruvian music, you know, and kind of acting like an old man. And then he stops and takes out a cell phone and pretends to be talking on a cell phone. So, you know, kind of, you know, the meshing of cultures with the old timey dress, but the new technology. And the guy from India brought an outfit, a special outfit they use that you know, the part for the guy was pretty easy. He just wore pants and some feathers in his hair, and the lady wore feathers. Feathers, plural. She had a skirt on. I don't know if they would have wore that down there, but she did wear a skirt, and then she had strategically placed feathers and a flesh-colored bra, but it was really exciting and interesting. I'm not sure what word to use. I mean, National Geographic was there, I can say. But I mean, here's what I told the people. I felt like we got a taste of revelation where people from every tribe and tongue and culture worship the Lord. And most of them gave a greeting in a native dialect of their country, whether it was Quechua or Tacuna or whatever the dialect was. So you had all these greetings, God bless you in the name of Jesus, but in their different languages. And then they got them up for a big group picture. And I just thought to myself, this is just a small taste of what heaven's going to be like with all those different cultures. And God's not embarrassed by anything, so because He made it. So that was how we closed out the final night. During the conference, we also installed two new national directors for countries. One of them was a new country, Ecuador, I believe that we installed. And then the other one was a passing of the torch. And this is an interesting story. Christian Sharing Christ actually began in 1969, 36 years ago, in Costa Rica. The missionary that came down from Georgia that started Christian Sharing Christ was only there for about 6 months before his wife's illness caused him to return to the States. And in that short 6 month period of time, they set up some teams to share films, share the gospel through films. They rented a building in the market area, right close to a bus station, where there's a lot of people that came out all the time, and they showed the Burning Hell film and whatever films they had back then. Mainly, they had a 16 millimeter projector in the Burning Hell, and so they showed these films, and the brother would, you know, communicate with them as he could, and then finally turn it over to Brother Hector Slaughter, who some folks knew, who, you know, was a headed up for probably over 30 years, around 30 years. And did a tremendous job of leading and raising finances. But Brother Hector never really went down there. In fact, he would bring them up here, and they would have an international conference here in the States. He'd pay to bring the leaders to the States. So it was only when Brother Patrick Calhoun took over that he started going down there and traveling to where they were. And that was such an encouragement to them. And then they'd have the first conference was 6 years ago, or 5 years ago in Nicaragua, and then 2 years ago in Guatemala, and then this year in Costa Rica. But it was really kind of poignant because the ministry started in Costa Rica, and the Costa Rican who headed it up, his name was Benjamin, and after some point of working in the ministry for many years, he was on a mission trip through Nicaragua to carry the gospel or the films to another area. And he disappeared. This was during the time of the Nicaraguan Civil War and all the warfare that was going on. And so during the time that he was gone, his wife just began to kind of fill in the gaps and continue the ministry. And for the last 20-something years, she has headed up the ministry in Nicaragua, in Costa Rica, excuse me. And it wasn't until just a couple of years ago that she got confirmation that her husband actually was dead, that someone had seen who had been in the military at the time could give a firsthand account of him having been killed so many years earlier. But she had been so faithful over all those years, and The man who did that was also a Christian Sharing Christ missionary from Nicaragua. And at that conference 2 years ago or 4 years ago, whenever that was, he actually got down on his knees and asked her forgiveness on behalf of all the people for the death of her husband. They said it was much, much lament and tearing, crying and sharing and hugging and reconciliation. And so since then, she has kind of felt like the mantle was going to be lifted and passed on to someone else, even though she's been hitting it up for so long. And it was an exciting thing to be able to lay hands on her son whose name is Jaime. And he is now leading the Christian Sharing Christ outreach there in Costa Rica. So exciting activities that are taking place there. That conference ended on Friday night. And then on Saturday, Steve Thomas came over and picked us up at the conference and took Lori and myself over to the children's home. And this is the couple that we support down there and have supported for several years. And I do have some pictures of this because we weren't so busy working. This first picture, we may have to kill the first couple of lights. Let me see if this will work or not. Can y'all see that okay? Would you like me to kill a couple of lights? Okay, I'll kill a couple of lights. You know how photographs never do justice? This was a sunset the first night. Or the second night, I can't remember what it was, second night, I guess it's not the first night, and we were so in awe of this incredible sunset. The sky literally looked like I say, the pictures don't do justice, but the sky looked like it was on fire. Show the next picture, and this looks out over the mountains, and the colors were so deep and so incredible and so magnificent, and I was kind of feeling jealous. They get to live in this incredible country with this beautiful sunset they see every night. And the worker, the Costa Rican worker, said, "Brother, we don't see this very often. This is just a special combination of atmosphere and, you know, big storm that had just come through and all that." So he said it was a treat for them as well. But I want to show you a couple of pictures of the place where they're at in the children's home. Well, this is their son, Lukey. And as you can see, Lucas, or Luke, is always helping. Luke is their third son, Lori. And he's got Down syndrome, but he is always willing to get right in the middle of things. And they were pouring some concrete. And I hope they got him out before the concrete dried. I'm not sure if... I think they did get him out because he waved goodbye to us before we left. But we'll go on to the next picture. This is their daughter, Bethany, their fourth child. And such a sweet, sweet, tender little girl. And we'll keep going to the next slide. This picture, I'm going to stand and look at it. This to the right... You can see the corner of one of their children's homes. Directly ahead of you is what's going to be a daycare center. And then on the left is a cafeteria where the church that's overseeing this whole thing meets on Sundays. They have about 300 people in their local church. It's headed by Dr. Jorge Gomez is his last name, I believe. And this church is called this ministry is called Project Abraham. And this is the vision of a local church there in Costa Rica that is the desire is to raise up the children home on the right. They work with the government. They've been approved by the government through all the health department issues and the child safety protection issues. And what they do is they get children who have been declared abandoned by the government. The government's gone through this whole process of trying to find people that can take them. Either the mother is dead or she is in jail or she has been declared incompetent. One of the children, the mother, is mentally retarded, and so these children don't have aunts or uncles or grandmothers. Anybody can take them in. So the state declares them wards of the state, and then in that case, then they can be given over to the children's home. And so that's what the children's home concept is. The daycare center concept, they're in a very poor area of San Jose, Costa Rica, and a lot of people, the mothers are having to work just like here, you know, two job type things, or maybe a situation where a mother doesn't have a husband that provides income. And so many of these women ended up turning to prostitution or turning to other types of things because they don't have any kind of hope for their life. And so the daycare center, the desire is to provide safe and suitable daycare for these mothers who can get proper jobs and good placement, job skills and training. And, of course, this is all done in a Christian atmosphere. And the cost for the daycare to the mother is based on their ability to pay. So it's so underwritten by the church somewhat. And then on the left will be, and you'll see a little better picture in a minute, is the cafeteria that will serve for the daycare. But like I say, right now it's serving as a sanctuary for the church. And you'll notice the design looks very modern and very very architecturally sound, very neat, very eye-catching. Look at the next picture real quick. There's nothing shabby about it. This is the first children's home. The picture, go back to the last picture and kind of show them back and forth. Okay. What we're fixing to do now is we're fixing to step kind of into that middle space and then look back towards the back. Okay, now go forward and you'll see the first children's home is a two-story building there in the back. And when they built it and they were getting ready to move in, the Costa Rican government says, oh, wait a minute, it's not accessible to people with disabilities. You have to put in a wheelchair ramp. I mean, you have to put in an elevator and you have to make all these changes to make it available to people in wheelchairs and disabilities. And they're like, we can't do that. So what they agreed to do was to build a house that would be completely handicap accessible, which is the house that you can barely see on the right-hand side. That's a one-story house with ramps and like 1.5 meter, which would be 4.5 foot wide doors. And, you know, everything is just wide open. And their government is almost, if not more so, demanding our government of all these kind of standards. But that's the first home. And for the last over the last year, Steve and Georgiana lived in that home with their 4 children, plus 4 children that the government had given them. So they had 8 children in that home. And just this last week, in fact, while we were at the conference, they moved out of that home into the single-floor home, and they brought a Costa Rican, their first set of Costa Rican parents that have been working with the last several months, training them on how to do this, Brownie and Ingrid. Sound like a nice Costa Rican name. Sound Brownie and Ingrid. But they're Costa Ricans. They speak, you know, just Spanish. And so they now have that home. And since the Thomas's children are not there, it's going to free up. They can have as many as, I think he said 10 to 12 children could be in each home. So that's that picture. On the left-hand side is the balcony of the daycare center. And if we'll go forward to the next slide, you'll see this is now looking, you were looking at the overhang of the balcony on the left. Well, this is the balcony. They're going to have to put a big circular staircase there. What I wanted to tell you about this design, because it really looks neat. You look there and you think, man, this is really futuristic almost, or it's very artistic. And what happened was, is that they had some designers from the architects were from Columbia. And they donated their labor and their expertise and their skills, and their goal was to build as much as they could from the local materials. Now, wood is very, very, very expensive in Costa Rica to build with. I mean, very expensive. You find almost everything you find, in a minute you'll see everything around it is built with block, you know, concrete blocks, because it's the cheapest way to build. But this obviously has a lot of wood. It looks like metal, but all that's wood with the metal brackets that where it's bolted together. Well, here's what happened. There was a local glass company that got their glass imported from Japan or from somewhere, and their glass would come in these huge wooden crates of unfinished wood. But I mean, big crates. And they were throwing this wood away. They were looking for a place to get rid of it. So the pastor, Jorge, got in touch with them and said, look, we'll be glad to take the wood off of your hands and dispose of it for you if you'd like to, if you'll donate it to us. And so they made an agreement. So he would truck it over to their place every day. Sometimes 2 to 3 18-wheeler loads of this wood would just show up, and they'd just dump it off. Now, they'd have to go through and pull nails out and sort the wood, and they'd have to stack it up and dry it, you know, because it was still a wet wood, wasn't suitable for work. And then they had to go through and classify the strength and the thickness and all this other stuff. And after that process was done, then the architects saw the materials they had to build with, and they were able to go through and build these incredible rafter systems and roof systems. And it really has a beautiful view, and the wood was 100% free. Now, what's happening since then, the glass company has gone out and taken pictures of this place and now isn't giving them any more wood. They're selling the wood now and saying, this is what you can do with our wood. But they gave them enough to do everything they needed. So it was really a neat. On top of that, the glass company, the owner, who's not a Christian, was so impressed with what they're doing, he donated all of the glass for the entire facility. So every piece of glass that you see, right now you don't see any there because that's being built, but all the glass in the cafeteria, he donated all the window systems and all that. We'll go on to the next slide. This is kind of turning around looking back where we were taking the picture from. On the right, you can see the cafeteria that's got a neat look. Almost looks like Noah's Ark or something from the outside. And on the left is the new house, the one-story house. And you can see up there is there's some warehouses that are right next to, and everything's concrete around them. So it's like this oasis in the middle of this concrete jungle. Where they are used to be a coffee plantation, and the coffee plantation owner allowed some people to squat, and over time it's just a big slum there now. But they're right in the middle of all this area. They've got quite a few acres and a neat project going on. Okay, we'll slide on to the next picture. And these are some of the children. I don't know the children's names. Lori remembers them.
The older girl on the right is
their son. Now, there's some more. I didn't put all the pictures up, but a couple more. You see this beautiful yard? Isn't that gorgeous? You know, they've got this nice fence that some folks came down from the States and did. Another group brought them this trampoline. They have another area. I don't have a picture of it, but an American kid came down with all the money he got for graduating high school. He brought all that money with him and he built them a playground center, which I thought was so cool. You know, just that was so neat. He took all of his money that he had gotten. But this grass, they found somebody down there that sold it. And Brother Jorge is not bashful at all about seeking help. And he said, he'll call time after time after time after time after time until he can get to talk an appointment with the owner. He likes to talk to him face to face. And he likes to bring him out to the project site. So he brings the guy out to the project site and says, this is what we have, and this is what we need, and this is what we'd like you to do. And the guy donated half the grass, and they bought the other half the grass, and they had this incredibly large, beautiful lawn that the kids are free to roam in. So like I say, right in the middle of this slum, in the middle of this, you know, there's this oasis where these children are being trained in the admonition of the Lord. They're being loved. These children, some of these, no child in this home yet is over 5 years old. There's four that have been turned over by the government. A couple of them have been sexually abused already. I mean, one of them's got mental problems. Another one, when she came in at 8 months old, looked like a 3 month old. Couldn't roll over, couldn't do anything. Malnutritioned, full of worms. And, you know, I mean, these children are now being given this incredible lease on life. And when it's all said and done, there'll be three of these homes, and that big fence will go around all three of them. They'll share one big common yard, and they'll be raised and loved and trained and prepared for the future. And these will be some of the future leaders of Costa Rican Church. We'll go to the next slide. On the far left is the... Jesus. And they had somebody that Jesus really needed some help with fine motor skills. And they have a local swimming instructor that offered to give the children free swimming lessons and free time in the pool, no charge, so that they can, you know, work on those skills. They also, one of the requirements of the government is they have to have a psychologist on staff that works with these children. And a Christian psychologist has donated all their time. And so it's really, really neat. Go ahead to the next picture. I don't know if I got a couple pictures of the family. This is Steve Jr. This is Steve and Jordana's oldest son. He's 18 and will be graduating high school this year. Their school runs February through November. And then they have December and January off for their summer holiday. Not summer, but so he's in his last year. And I thought it was a neat picture. If you go on to the next one, this is Brother Brownie and one of the babies, if you look. You know, he's in the yard, and you can see the little temporary fence and then the cafeteria behind it. And Brownie is spelled B-R-A-U-N-Y. When I first saw it on the website, I was thinking Brawny, you know, like Brawny, but he's Brownie. Okay, the next picture, there's Steve and his daughter Bethany. And the next picture is Georgina and her son. Georgiana, thank you. I keep thinking Georgina in Spanish, but Georgiana and their son, give me a second. I'll think of it. Hold on. It's not Luke. It's not Steven. It's Caleb. Caleb. That's her second son. And I think that's all the pictures. Is there one more? Nope. That's it. And that's the inside of the new house. So I thought you'd get a little feel for what they're doing down there and the goal. You know, when I saw what they were doing, even though they don't have hundreds of children, right now they have four. When it's all said and done, they'll probably have 25 to 30 children. When it's all said and done. But each of these children will live in a home with house parents, will be raised in the context of a family. And I believe that they're going to have the opportunity to be impacted so that they can in turn impact. You know, it's the kind of work that's going to take a long time to pay off, you know, until these children are 18, 20, 30 years old. But it's the kind of work that's very valuable. And when I saw this, I had a deeper appreciation for what they're doing. Over half of the support for the project and the building has come from Costa Rica, even though, you know, almost half of it's come from the States. A lot of it's come from down there. And the church, what's so neat to me is that the local church is catching the vision. And that local church, this has been done in the context of a local church. And so it's not just, you know, somebody else trying to do something Lone Ranger-wise. They'd love to have us down to do a work project. If we want to go down there at some point, or if you just want to go down there and visit, they'd love to have you. So neat. But I go back to the issue of being in the context of a local church. I think that's so wonderful, and the local church is providing the ownership and the support. And there's going to be, next to the cafeteria in the future, will be a sanctuary where the church will meet. Like I say, right now the church is running about 300 people, and so it's a growing church. The pastor, Brother Jorge, has two master's degrees from South Carolina University. One's in divinity and one's in education. I mean, he is a go-getter. He has these three-hour-long meetings with 20 points, each one with 20 sub-points, they say. So, and he's punctual. He starts things on time and goes long. So, yeah, I know you'd love him, Daddy. He's a neat fella. All right, so that kind of gives you a wrap up of what we were doing on this trip. And Steve and Georgiana were so blessed with the offering that you sent down with us, and we brought them down a whole suitcase full of goodies, and then also were able, did I say Georgina again? Georgiana, Steve and Georgiana, I'll get it, and the little financial gift that we gave them as well. So thank y'all for doing that. Let me take a couple of minutes and share with you from Ephesians chapter number 6. And I know that we've already taken a good bit of time with this. And so what I'm going to do now is just really more of a devotional thought with you. I have 3 points, and each one of them has a bunch of sub-points, but we probably won't do them all. I'm just going to share a couple of things with you, and then we'll wrap this up. But I was reading today in my devotion in Ephesians 6, and this really gripped my heart the way that I think it was supposed to, the way it's supposed to grip all of our hearts. And in Ephesians 6, Paul is writing about relationships, and he talks about husband-wife relationships. He talks about children and parent relationships. And then he gets to the section that I want us to read together, verses 5 through 9. Look with me, beginning in verse number 5. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ. Not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. And masters, do the same thing to them, and give up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. You know, Paul dives right into a difficult issue of this relationship of the slaves and the masters. We refer to it now more than anything else like a workplace, bosses and employees or employers, employees. And work can be a difficult thing. I remember hearing, some of you may have heard about George Bush when he was first elected to Texas, and Texas as the governor. He was elected to a difficult position because the opposition party was in power in the legislature. And here he comes in, one party, and the whole Senate and House representatives from Texas are the other party, and they've been sending signals how that, you know, he's not going to be able to get his stuff through, and all his campaign promises are dead on the floor and all that. And so, towards the beginning of his term, he invited the leader of the opposition party to his office for a time of discussion and to try to find some common ground. And they had this long meeting with no common ground. I mean, they weren't getting anywhere. And it looked like it was just a fruitless discussion. So the end of the meeting, as it came time to wrap things up, Bush got up and the other man got up, and then Bush went over and grabbed the man by the neck and kissed him on the cheek. And the fella about lost it. What are you doing? What'd you do that for? And it's reported that Bush said to him, well, if I couldn't get any concessions out of you, I figured I could at least get a kiss. And they say the guy started laughing so hard that the tension was lost, and a great friendship began. And for the next, I think it was 8 years or however long, he had a great working relationship with this man as the leader of their party. Now, I'm not recommending that you go out and kiss people that you have a hard time with. No, probably not. The fact of it is that work is hard and workplace issues are tough. I mean, you look around you and you see, and just in the last 10 years, how many times have we seen people, what's the phrase that we use nowadays? Going postal. Have you heard that? And David, you were in Japan too long. You missed all those. What's the phrase going postal? What does it mean? Yeah, you lost it. It refers to some of them guys that we had a series of folks back in the 80s and early 90s that post office workers got so mad they took out guns and started shooting their fellow employees. And then you have it in other situations where guy shows up and shoots his boss and his ex-co-workers, and you know, it just happened to be. Workplace issues can be tough, and I'm not saying they're not. But the Scripture does give us some insight on how we are to relate to one another as we work for a living. And I began thinking about this, and here's the thing that really, really jumped out at me. I want you to look at a phrase that's used in verse number 6. He says, not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. And I don't know if I just never thought of it before, but when I looked at that verse, look at that word, not by way of eye service. Have you ever heard the word eye service before? I make up words. I never heard that word used. I can't think of a single time anybody's ever used that word. And I've heard of lip service, you know, paying lip service or giving lip service to something. So eye service, interesting. What is it he's talking about? And he's talking to these employees, if you allow me to use it that way, and he's saying it's important that what you do, you don't just do to please the eye service. And he goes on to say, as men pleasers, don't want to be a man pleaser. I want to be a God pleaser. Anybody ever heard that song? No? Okay. But his point was, and look at the last phrase of verse 6, doing what? The will of God from the heart. The will of God is where you are employed at the place you're at right now. That is God's will for you right now, and you need to do that. How? From the heart. Now, that doesn't mean that God's will for you can't change tomorrow and you get another job. And thank God if it does. But I see some points in here that really speak to me about our relationship as employees and employers. And it encourages me to be reminded that our work is to be done not as unto our boss, not as unto our paycheck, but as unto the Lord. Let me give you 3 quick points. I have to sneak them in. Working for a living, working in this way, is a matter of integrity. This is what he's calling us to do. It's about doing the right things. He says in verse number 5, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of heart, as to Christ, not by way of eye service. And he did all this based on something that he began the precept in verse number 1. If you look back at verse number 1, he set the precept. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Why? For this is right. It's the right thing to do. So you go to verse number 4. Verse 4. Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up that discipline and instruction of the Lord. The implied thing is, this is the right thing to do. And then in verse number 5, employees, if I can say it that way, be obedient to those who are your employers according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ, because this is right. It's the right thing to do. God's instruction for us is to do the right thing. When he talks about fear, he's talking about respect, he's talking about reverence to the person who has a position over you. But then he goes on, it's not just about doing the right thing, it's about doing the right things for the right reason. Look at verse number 6. Not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. This is the integrity issue. You know, we're not just trying to win the favor of our employer. Yes, we want our employers to look upon us with kindness. We don't want them to hate us. We don't want them to just dislike us. But the reason that we do our job the right way is not because the boss is watching over us. It's because we're doing the job as unto Christ with integrity. There was a story you may have heard about the Duke of Wellington. He was feared. He was called the Iron Duke. And I love this story because I heard about the guy that invented this iron waistcoat. And he was trying to get the Duke of Wellington to buy into this. You know, if you would wear this, if somebody tries to come assassinate you, you know, their knife will bounce off or their arrow will bounce off and you'll be protected. And the Duke of Wellington supposedly, you know, says, well, put it on. And he expects it and he hits it and does all this stuff. And then he calls for a rifleman. And the inventor hits the door. Waistcoat and all. Yeah, he wasn't quite so sure that he was going to stand behind what he was called to do. Well, this is what we're called to do. Stand behind our work. Stand behind not because we're doing it for him. We're not just trying to please him. Not just trying to make it, you know, get by. But as unto Christ. Colossians chapter 3, verse 23. Would you put that verse up for me? Colossians 3:23 tells us that whatever we do, as do our work heartily, as for the Lord, rather than for men. Whatever you do, do your work. Whatever your employment is, do it as for the Lord. Whether you're a baker or a cabinet maker or a fisherman or a truck driver or a computer coder or a ditch cleaner, whatever you do, it says do your work with all your heart. And so it comes down to this thing. It is a heart issue. If you were back in Ephesians chapter 6, you would see, again, he says in verse number 5, in the sincerity of your heart. In chapter verse 6, he says, doing the will of God from the heart. I wrote in my gems today this thought. If I can't do it with all my heart, I don't need to do it. Not just work, but whatever God's called us to do, we need to be able to pour our heart into it. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not times for that there's not difficult times, and there's not times that it's hard to do. But this is the instruction of the Lord. The Lord gives instructions to the employees about what they're supposed to do. He gives instructions to the employer, and I'm not going to get into that. But I want you to think about this. He says, in the end of verse number 5, three words, as to Christ. How many of you ever heard of the Stradivarius violin? Anybody ever heard of Stradivarius? I mean, it's such a famous violin, everybody's ever heard of it. You know the first name of the guy? Mr. Stradivarius? Not Mr., but what's his first name? Antonius was his name. Antonius Stradivarius was the guy who came up with this incredible instrument. And they would work and make them. These things were worth thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Partly because of their age, but also partly because of the beauty and the sound that they have and the resonance. And his philosophy was that music is made to worship God with. And my violins are made to communicate the music that's made to worship God with. And if my violin is not good, it can disrupt the communication of the worship of God. Therefore, I have to make my violin in such a way that it enhances the worship to God. He recognized that his job of cutting down a tree or shaping wood or carving or whatever it was he was doing, it all had to do with worship. Now, that's an easy connection to make with music, isn't it? We can easily make that connection. Music worships God. But it says, Colossians 3:23, can you put it back up again? Whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than men. And then here in Ephesians chapter 6, like we're saying, not verse 6, chapter 6, verse 6, not by way of eye service as man pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. It's a heart matter. Sincerity of heart. Wholeheartedly is the call that God has given to us. You see, the focal point is the one to whom the heart is given. What is that song we sing? It's all about you. If you're working on a chain gang, you may sing it. It's all about you. Now, someday you feel like you're working on a chain gang, and you want to be singing, I've been working on... Oh, that's not what you want to be singing. But it's got to be about Him. And if you can't do what you're doing, giving Him the glory with it, then you may need to find what He wants you to do that you can give Him glory with. Amen? Because He's got something that right here, according to this, is the will of God. Doing the will of God from the heart. He equates doing the will of God with where you are. It's interesting. You know, He didn't... I'm not going to get into the slavery. He didn't really get into that. He just said, whatever position you were in, wherever you are when you found Jesus, now you need to start realizing you got a different master. Now, we didn't pay attention to this, but let's look at the last part of this, and just by way of closing. He says... Verse 7, with goodwill, render service as to the Lord. Remember, that's who your boss is, ultimately. It doesn't matter if your boss is Bill Gates, Donald Trump, Ed Dorsey. Doesn't matter who your boss is, ultimately you're working for the Lord. Okay? So he says, verse number 7, with goodwill, render service as to the Lord. And look at verse number 8. Knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord. See, your real paycheck doesn't come from the guy who signs on the dotted line. The real paycheck doesn't come attached to a W-2 slip. The real paycheck, no, that's thank God for that check, you know, because it, you know, I have found that Super One prefers that over a faith promise. And Clico does too. But the real payment comes from the Lord. And in verse number 9, he says, and masters do the same thing to them. The same thing? What do you mean the same thing? Serve them, respect them, honor them, take care of them. In Colossians chapter 4, I don't have time to go into it, but in Colossians chapter 4, he instructs employers to take care of their employees. Treating them fair, treating them right, justice, fairness. That's a whole debate we could get into one day. Not debate, but I mean, there's a lot of instruction that needs to be given to masters as well, to employers, the way they're supposed to take care of their employees. But here's where I want you to pay attention to in verse 9. Doing the same things to them, give up threatening. And then here's why he says, this is your motivation. Knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there's no partiality with him. See, here's the thing, folks. We look at people and we see rank. We see boss, employee. We see first string, second string, third string. We see a 5-year employee, a 10-year employee. We see manager. We see assistant manager. We see first cashier. We see loading dock person. I mean, we see based almost like the military. God doesn't see it. The work that the guy does stocking the shelves, if he does it with all of his heart, is more valuable to God than the guy counting the money up in the office with the cigar smoke out thinking, look what I've done for myself. The guy doing the menial task with the right heart is more pleasing to God. But you see, if they're both believers, and this is the key thing, this is what Paul's trying to say. If they're both believers, God sees them both on the same footing. Jew, Greek, slave, master, man, woman, white, black, polka-dotted, not polka-dotted. I just threw that one in. That's not in the Bible. He says there's no partiality. God sees them all the same. And so make sure that we get this heart issue right. Let's make sure we get this heart issue right. As I was reading this today, this thought of verse 6, the last phrase, doing the will of God from the heart, is really what captured my attention. Now, I want to challenge you, to encourage you to be thinking about this issue of your seeing your work as God's will. Where you are, seeing that as God's will, and doing that with your heart as to Him. And just remember that crazy word, eye service. It's not about eye service. It's not about pleasing them while they're around. It's about doing it with integrity. Integrity is doing what's right when nobody's going to be able to brag on you about it. Integrity is doing what's right when nobody can brag about you. You did it because it was right. They say that when they were cleaning the Sistine Chapel that Michelangelo did that all his painting on the ceiling? Is that the right chapel? You know, they had that huge restoration project. They've had a couple of them, actually. But they say that in one of those restoration projects, as they were clearing away the dust and the grime of all the candles that had, you know, been burnt in that place over the hundreds of years, and all that, they began to find things that hadn't been seen before. And one of the things that they discovered that made them so excited was they actually found Michelangelo's fingerprints in parts of his work. You know, because he would use his fingers in some of it to touch or whatever. They actually have the fingerprints of the artist in his work. When I heard that, I thought, God's fingerprints on us. His identity is on us because we are His workmanship, created in Christ for good works that He prepared for us. He's created us to do the will of God from our heart. So I trust that will encourage you and bless you and give you something that you own. If you don't like it, take it up with Paul. He's the one that said it. If you don't like the interpretation, I'll be glad to talk to you about that. But the will of God from the heart. Father, thank you for your words that are always relevant to us. Thank you for speaking to us and the many different ways that you have tonight and in our worship to you and the special songs that Pam shared and in hearing the stories and seeing the photographs of what you're doing in another place and looking in your word and all these different ways you've spoken to us differently but uniquely as we needed. I pray, Father, that we will indeed be reflections of you, carrying your fingerprint in every place we go, that even our work ethic will be that which will give an impression
to others of the change that you have made in our lives that will make someone else hungry for you and will make someone else want to know you. Thank you, Father, that you called us to do your will. Help us to do it with all of our heart. In Jesus' name, amen.